Window World is proud to present Kevin Keatsman Has Issues. Simply the best for less at WindowsKansasCity.com.
We have wallowed in pity long enough. The response by conservatives is underway. This podcast is 100% guaranteed to make you feel better about what's going on in America because I believe in the power of the people, and the people are about to take over. Everywhere I look, regular Americans are stepping up and being heard in the wake of Donald Trump. I have several examples so exciting, if you're not careful, you may get all amped up and get a speeding ticket. So be safe. Poland is now the beacon of free speech in the world, not the United States. The government in Poland has passed tough laws against big tech censoring information in that country and lashed out publicly that they will never forget 45 years of communism and nobody will ever, ever take away their conservative Christian values or free speech again. Like ever. Love it in Poland. You got to hear this. Carson Wentz has been traded to the Colts from the Eagles for a song. You won't believe how cheap they got him. The Eagles should have done this right after the Super Bowl win a few years ago when Nick Foles was their quarterback. We'll talk about what it means for the AFC. And Wichita State is having an amazing basketball season amid major controversy. Greg Marshall, their coach, is out. The interim coach is getting the job done. Wichita State shocks Houston Thursday night, and now they look like they're in the tournament. We'll also touch on KU and MU this weekend on KKHI. Brought to you by Elite Energy, part of Elite Automation. Elite Energy is a no-brainer if you own, operate, or know somebody that does of any kind of a big building. Warehouse, schools, churches, office buildings. Elite Energy will come to your building and consult with you how to save money on your energy bills. They don't sell you anything. This is a free service. When you save money, Elite Energy gets a portion of that. They'll take a percentage of what they save you. Everybody wins. Seriously, check out the website, EliteAutomate.com. It's EliteAutomate.com. These people can save thousands and thousands of dollars for any business anywhere in the country. All you got to do is give them a call, and they'll save you money. EliteAutomate.com. Roberts Robinson, Chevrolet Buick GMC in Excelsior Springs. We're going to be driving that Sierra Denali this weekend now. Oh, baby. We've been locked in like a lot of people with this bad weather. I think I'm going to take her out in the country a little bit. I shouldn't. Well, Mike's going to find out anyway. I kind of want to take it off-road a little bit. I want to take it out on some dirt roads and some things like that. I want to see what she'll do. This has been fun for me. I've never driven a really big, powerful, awesome truck like the Sierra Denali. It is so comfortable and gorgeous. It has everything you could possibly need. My wife likes it so much. She loves sitting up high. She can see everything. My dog even likes it. It's cool. I've never had anything quite like it. I can't imagine there's a better truck anywhere on earth, to be honest. It is the cream of the crop of GM trucks. GMC Sierra Denali. Check it out at Roberts Robinson, Chevrolet Buick GMC in Excelsior Springs or online at robertsrobinson.com where you can shop, click, and drive GMC. We are professional grade. Back9development.com. Back9development is they're a custom builder. They'll custom build homes, commercial buildings. They're redoing Aggieville in Manhattan. They got a big project there, but they'll build homes in Kansas City, Lawrence, Topeka, Manhattan, anywhere somebody wants a custom build. Or if you live in a rural area somewhere within an hour or two, they're perfect for that. If you need to, you live on a farm and you're trying to build a new home, you want a new house or a big build job on your property, man, this is it. Back9development.com. It's the numeral 9, back9development.com. Right now they're featuring condominiums on the Colbert Hills Golf Course called the Solheim at Grand Mere. These are perfect for your college kids' second home or weekend getaways for the K-State games. Tremendous investment opportunity. These 1 and 2 bedroom condos start at just $249,000, and they're upscale, big time. Free, maintenance-free living, resort pool, elevators, covered parking, the whole deal. You're going to love them. If you want to learn more, just look at the website, back9development.com. It's the numeral 9. Just go check it out, if nothing else. Dream a little bit. Look at some of these custom homes. Back9development.com. It's the numeral 9. Or if you want more information and you want to get on the list for commitment, it costs no money, no deposit necessary until you go to the site and see it for yourself. You can call TJ and get on the list. 785-236-0161. That's 785-236-0161. These condos are expected to be up and running, open for business by September. So call TJ and check that out at back9development.com. You'd think the vaccine's a shot in the arm. Whoa, baby, I got a shot in your arm today. Nothing but optimism on KKHI. Hit it.
Fry Orthodontics presents Kevin Keatsman Has Issues. Your smile is just the start. Online at fryorthodontics.com.
Oh man, I couldn't be in a better mood on a gorgeous Friday. We got sunshine going. The weekend is ahead of us. The temperatures are breaking. I made a bold prediction yesterday. I think the high temperature yesterday was 27 degrees. And it felt like summertime. For those of you listening around the country and around the world, we've been very cold here in the Midwest. You've probably heard a little bit about that as the trouble has mounted in places like Texas. We've done pretty well here in Kansas and Missouri. But I made a bold prediction yesterday that the high temperature yesterday of 27 degrees will be the coldest high temperature between now and December. That's just the way I'm looking at it. That's the eternal optimism that we must all wake up with every day and try to move forward in our lives. And I've got a big dose of optimism for you today on Kevin Keatsman Has Issues. So, yeah, the temperatures look like they're headed into the 40s and 50s next week, and I don't think there's going to be a whole lot of turning back into the 20s until it could happen in November or October. I guess that could happen. But I'm choosing to be optimistic that we're going to have a great October and November later this year, and we won't see 28 degrees for a high again until maybe December. That sounds like a plan, man. Sound like a plan for you? I'm so optimistic because of some of the things that are popping up. We've had, you know, we've dealt with a lot of bummers here. There's just no other way to describe it. A lot of bummers. Trump loses. The White House, the House, and Senate are gone. We see all this stuff happening. We have the riot thing on January 6th. We go through an impeachment. It all just looks like, and I know you felt it because I felt it. And I remember specifically saying several weeks ago on this podcast, we don't know it now, but there's better days ahead. There's good things coming. And hey, listen, there's plenty of bad. It's going to come out of the next 2 years. There's plenty of bad. There's a lot of policies. A lot of things are going to happen that we don't like. There's all these things. But as we ask ourselves, and we've mourned the loss of Rush Limbaugh this week, who was just such a national treasure and so important to conservatism in this country, so vitally important, we're asking the question, what's next? Who's next? How do we deal with this? Where do we go from here? I mean, it's just nothing but one question after another. And I've been mulling this over for a couple of days. And, you know, it's a bad list here. Trump's out. Rush died. The Dems have control of everything. And so you have to look around and you have to think, okay, what is the natural reaction to something like that? Because we all want the big solution. Everybody wants the big solution. Everybody wants to fast forward 4 years and put a conservative in the White House. That's the big solution. That's the easiest thing because the president can block anything. And we saw what Trump was able to block, not only what he did over the course of 4 years, but what he was able to block. And that is the real power of the White House, the executive branch, is what you can stop, what you can block. No matter what happens anywhere else in the country as president, you can stop a lot of stuff. And we see that. And maybe the president has more authority and power now than ever before. So yes, we all want that. We all want the big picture solution. But big things never happened. One thing I learned in 35 years covering sports, and let me tell you, I met and interviewed a whole bunch of really crappy coaches that didn't know what they were doing, that made a whole lot of money, and you just shook your head and you went, wow, how did you get where you are? Who hired you? Or how did this happen? But there was one common thread with all the great coaches I was around. It was not personality. It wasn't, are they quiet or are they loud? Do they own a news conference or not own a news conference? Are they, you know, really, really smart, like their education high level, or are they street smart? No, none of that. There was one commonality with every single coach that I ever came across in big time college or professional athletics, and that was never really think about the big item. In other words, if you're managing, when you're Ned Yost and you're losing 106 games as manager of the Royals, and Alcides Escobar is batting 187, and he comes up in the eighth inning with the game on the line and strikes out on three pitches, and the news conference happens afterwards, and nobody believed, this is an indelible moment, nobody believed Ned Yost. Nobody believed him. They said, why didn't you pinch hit for Escobar, who was a young player at the time and couldn't hit his way out of a wet paper bag? And Ned said, because he has potential, and this is a learning experience, and down the road it will matter that he struck out tonight and we lost this game. It will matter. And it did. Dude had the second highest batting average in the World Series for the Royals, right? 5 years later, or 4 years later, whenever it was. you hear things like that and you begin to think, okay, Ned Yost was fired in Milwaukee. He doesn't really, there was nothing Ned did with the media that made you think, okay, this guy's going to turn this ship around. This is going to work. There was nothing about Ned Yost. He was surly with the media at times. I think if he was your neighbor or your friend, he'd be the most loyal, gracious, and best friend you ever had. I think he's dyed-in-the-wool conservative. I think he's a great guy like that. But as a manager of a team that just lost and lost and lost, and there was nothing but bad news, every night the questions were about bad stuff. And so he developed this relationship with the media that his guard was up, and his defense mechanism was to be prickly with reporters. There was nothing he was doing when the Royals were losing that made you think Ned Yost was going to win. Or that if the Royals did get good players, or the players became good, that Ned was the right guy to win games. Nothing. He wasn't seen as a tactician, or particularly smart or articulate. A lot of the writers didn't like him because they knew he was conservative. They maybe thought he was dumb, you know. It's just the typical stuff. And then as it evolved, you see a few years later, Alcides Escobar has a tremendous World Series, and you realize how they got where they got, how you get to the White House, how you get the big picture thing is not thinking about it every day. It's about doing the little things every day to get better and get where you want to go. But you don't sit there with Alcides Escobar striking out in 2012 or whenever it was and think, okay, tonight was a big night to the world, but he articulated it. He didn't say we're going to win the World Series because he struck out tonight with the game on the line. He said this is part of the experience. He's our guy. It's going to work out. He famously said about Mike Moustakas, I've never been wrong about a player. I've never been wrong. Mike Moustakas is going to be fine. They sent him back to Omaha. He says, he's going to be fine. Alex Gordon, back and forth to Omaha. We're going to stand by him. We've never been wrong about a player. This player is going to be fine. Nobody believed it. We're watching every day, and it makes no sense. But they were doing the little things. They were changing the technique. They were changing the messaging. They were changing the approach at the plate. They were changing the thinking. They were changing all these little things that nobody could see, that you couldn't touch, you couldn't feel. And it all led to the big thing. And that's where we are in conservatism in America. It is a direct correlation between sports and politics. It is 100% identically the same thing, and I'm going to back this up right now. There, a congresswoman from Rifle, Colorado, Lauren Boebert, is amazing. All right, she's the one who carries her gun into Congress every day. And when we're asking what's next, I'm not going to sit here and tell you Lauren Boebert is going to be president or become a senator or even do great things. Okay? I don't know that. There's a tendency when we see young politicians that are brazen at the very beginning that they, and we saw this with AOC. She sounded really good for about a year, and then you realize she's a little nutty, she's overstepped, she loves the attention, then she wants more and more attention, says more and more outrageous things, and then you slip up and you say something you can't take back. That could easily happen with Lauren Boebert. I'm not making any, this is not about her specifically, that she is some dream candidate that's going to lead us down the road. I don't think she is. I just think she's one of us. I think she's one of us who's had enough. And this is starting to pop up everywhere. Let me tell you what Lauren Boebert did. She went on her committee. They're doing this stuff virtually. They don't want to meet in person. The Democrats don't want to do anything in person. Basically, they want the Republicans out of the room. They're acting like they're scared of her because she carries a gun. So Jared Huffman is chairing this committee that Lauren Boebert is on. It's her first committee that she's on. And they're doing it all by Zoom. And as they're doing it by Zoom, she has four, like, big, badass rifles on a shelf right behind her on this Zoom call. Like, I mean, she looked, it was over the top. It looked like something Saddam Hussein would do, right? One of these dictators in these countries, or Castro, would have behind him if he were on a Zoom call. It's a show of force. There was no question it was a show of force. So Jared Huffman, the chairman of the committee, says, if somebody wants to have a shrine to their gun fetish as a Zoom backdrop in their private life, they can do that. But this is our hearing room. And at some point, we're going to get past the COVID epidemic, and we'll all start showing up in person. And our safety and our ability to conduct business civilly without feeling threatened is a relevant consideration, unfortunately. So he referred to this as a shrine to a gun fetish. And Lauren Boebert's reaction was priceless. I mean, she was just outstanding on this. She replied back through her office. She did an interview, and I was going to play it for you, but to be honest, it wasn't that great. She said some decent things there, but these quotes that were released by her office were the best part. She said in response to all of the Democrats on her committee coming after her, "We all took an oath to uphold and secure the Constitution, every single one of us. Our first act as members of Congress was to take our oath of office, and please allow me to remind you, a portion of that oath, the chair and every other member here solemnly swore that we would support and defend the Constitution of the United States. The Second Amendment is very much a part of the Constitution of the United States. How about the 19th Amendment, she asks. Can women on this committee vote? Why does anyone think they can cherry-pick the Second Amendment and say this is the one enumerated right that we can take away from people? Why stop with the Second Amendment? Let's go ahead and quarter soldiers in the committee room. There's plenty of soldiers in the parking garage at Fort Pelosi in D.C. Mic drop. Boom. This is how you fight back, folks. It is not with violence. We all know that. It is not with violence. This was so articulate and brilliant, it cannot be argued. It cannot be argued. She turned it right around in their face and said, you're going to take away this woman's right to vote? That's an amendment? You're going to cherry pick the Second Amendment? Unbelievable argument. It cannot be. This is why conservatives always win in the arena of ideas. This cannot be refuted. She said, all of you Democrats, put your hand on a Bible, and you swore to an oath to uphold the Constitution. The Second Amendment is the Constitution. I have this right. You are not taking this away from me. And I will be the poster child for this. You can't do it. You swore as a Democrat to protect the Second Amendment. You swore. When you swore on the Constitution of the United States, you swore to uphold the Second Amendment. You want to take away my right to vote, the 19th Amendment? Come on, bring it up. And then the beautiful thing is, seriously, Fort Pelosi, this is the greatest term ever. This is how you do it. This is how Trump did it. We got spoiled. Trump did it on a big, bold, grand stage. He walked to the plate. He literally walked to the plate for his first at-bat in the big leagues in the World Series. But it was after 40 years of accomplishment in business and all these different things, huge celebrity status, all that. He did. He stepped to the plate in the World Series. That generally isn't how it works in politics. There is no more of that. I don't think we're going to find that. I think that's too wishful to think that will ever happen again in our lifetime, that somebody's just going to step up out of nowhere from out of politics and win the presidency. This is how you do it. You do it with young, badass fighters who get under their skin and people start to read about and people on the left hate. And they'll find something on her. They're going to find something she did. They're going to make her look bad. They're going to come after her. She knows that. She doesn't care. She'll go back to owning her bar and grill in Western Colorado. This is rural Colorado. This lady's not from Denver. She lives in a town called Rifle, Colorado. Okay? And her grill, her bar and grill was called Shooters. This is real. She's not fake. Okay? This isn't the homespun Sarah Palin Alaska stuff. This is her life. This is what Western Colorado is. This is what so many places in flyover country are. They are not going down easy, folks. This is where it begins. This is how it happens. It is things like this that we can point to and say, that's going to work. That's going to resonate with people. When suburban women hear, and they see your guns, and that suburban women don't want their guns, all right, it's not about the guns. When they hear that the people they voted for are trying to take away the rights of someone who lives in rural Colorado, and there's a Second Amendment right to bear arms, and it's a woman, and the woman points out, what are you coming for next, my right to vote? That resonates with people. Now, getting the word out is complicated. We don't have big tech. We don't have media. We don't have a lot of these things. So getting the word out is the hard part, but there's time. We have time because there's nothing we can do about the federal government control of the next 2 years. There's nothing we can do. But 2 years is a long time. And if this is a slow drip, I'll take it. And let's just assume, I don't know, 100,000 suburban white women nationwide that voted for Democrats know of this story now. Or will learn of this story about this woman who said, you coming after my right to vote next? You want my gun? Are you going to take my right to vote? That will resonate. That makes sense. They don't have to agree with her on the Second Amendment. I mean, almost everybody agrees, except for really far left people, about the Second Amendment. They don't want it to go away. I don't think hardly anybody does. We don't. It's part of who and what we are. That's when you choose to have guns. There's a lot of people who believe in the Second Amendment that don't have guns. And I don't think the liberals view it that way. They think that the Second Amendment is there just for people that have guns. No. The right to bear arms is very important, because if this government starts to take over and have control, there is no guarantee that because we're the most civilized, advanced, and greatest country in the history of human beings, there is no guarantee that the government doesn't try to take over and there are not uprisings from the people. There is no guarantee of that. Sorry, there's not. You're never past that. In any country, you never pass that. So this is hugely important. And I love this woman. I love what she's doing. And I love the fact that they said there's a rule. She can't take her gun. The reason she did this is because she can take her gun into the chamber. The general, when the House of Representatives meets, she's got it on her hip. She's got a Glock right on her hip. She walks right in with it every day. I would think they'd be thanking her at this point. If they have guards outside and they're scared, I think they should be happy that she's there with her gun. Oh, but no. No, no, the guns are good for the people outside that we pay to protect us, but they're not good for you coming in here. They act like they think she's going to shoot them. This is just outrageous. It's crazy, and people know it's crazy talk. So they have rules, or they put in a rule, that when she meets in committee, which is not in the main chamber, she cannot take her gun in there. So her response was, we're doing Zoom calls as a committee. She's meeting in the committee on a Zoom call. I'm taking my guns. And I mean, you should see the picture of her and the video of what's behind her while she's on this call. It's glorious. It is glorious because it's how you fight the fight the way they fight it. It's what you do. And it's happening everywhere. It's happening in Missouri. You guys remember the pool party last year? I'm telling you, I am filled with optimism today. This is a great story in Missouri. The great state of Missouri, which is turning more and more red every day. I just love it. Do you guys remember the pool party at the Lake of the Ozarks last year? It was about the time Mayor Quentin Lucas was in his scandal of taking pictures with women without masks. He didn't have a mask. The women didn't have them either, but he didn't have his. Do you remember the pool party? And they said, this is the super spreader. This is a national emergency, because these people in this swimming pool at the Lake of the Ozarks is the first thing we've seen nationwide of people gathering since everything was closed. Remember, everything was closed. Not in Camden County, Missouri. They're opening those lake bars, and they're opening up that pool, and I'll be damned if anybody in D.C. is going to tell them that some mandate is a law in Camden County, Missouri. The entire country went crazy over this event. Liberals' heads just spun. It just drove them crazy. That was Camden County. Now the authorities in Camden County have done something so fabulous, so wonderful. They have become the first sanctuary county in the state of Missouri. They did this about 3 weeks ago. They have a gun sanctuary ordinance in Camden County, Missouri now. The first one in Missouri. I think this is going to pop up all over the country. We're going to have dozens, if not hundreds, of counties that pass similar ordinances. Basically, what this ordinance says is no future law, act, order, rule, or regulation, whether past, present, or future, will infringe on the people's right to keep and bear arms guaranteed by the Second Amendment of the United States Constitution, Article 1, Section 23 of the Missouri Constitution, shall be ruled invalid in this county. It will not be recognized by this county, and it will specifically be rejected by this county, and shall be considered null and void and no effect in this county ever. And it is a long, long ordinance that they put in, the gun sanctuary ordinance in Camden County. It is brilliant. It is absolutely brilliant that nothing that has ever been done is happening now or will happen in the future, as long as the Second Amendment is in place, shall infringe upon anyone's rights to bear arms in Camden County, Missouri. There's no this mask mandate crap, this government control. See, this is what's beautiful about this country. We worry and we get concerned about cutting off free speech, mandates, you have to wear a mask, you have to live this way, you have to do that. They send this stuff down from the top. Here's the beauty of this country. If you live in San Francisco, they're going to enforce the silly mask mandate. They're going to enforce that on you. They're going to let illegals come in and rape and kill and do whatever and let them go back into the population. But you as an American citizen, if you don't follow the silly mandates that they come up with, we're going to enforce it. What we're about to learn over the next 2 years is, and we talked about this with Danny on the Patreon podcast Tuesday. We've all seen the map of county by county, which presidential candidate won the counties. And it's 80% red because all these counties all across America between the coasts and not in the big cities are all red. Like all these counties are red. County after county after county that is not in a major metropolitan area is red. It's a red map. What we're about to learn in all those places is they're going to fight back in those places. They're going to say, you can't tell us what to. We saw this in Kansas and Missouri with the masks. While I was running COVID tests last year, I would drive down to Nevada. I'd go through Fort Scott, Nevada, and drive back and several stops along the way. Butler, Missouri, every town I went through, there's nobody wearing masks. Everybody was wearing them in Kansas City. Nobody was wearing them in those places. They wore them in the hospital. In the facilities where I went in to pick up the COVID tests, they were wearing masks. But if I stopped at McDonald's to get an iced tea, I'd go inside. I wanted to use the bathroom while I was there. And nobody wearing masks in there, in those towns. They weren't following any of this stuff. Those people are leading. They're on the leading edge of what we're going to be doing. It's going to be the people that if you live in a city that you don't see as often, these are the smartest among us. They're the most wary of government overreach. They love their freedoms and protections. They like their open space. They like their neighbors to be far away. They want complete privacy in what they do in their life. How many stories have you seen of people, you ever heard of the term barn find? How many people live to be in their 80s or 90s and a couple dies on their place that's, you know, an hour away from a city and their closest neighbor is a quarter of a mile away? And oh, look at this. They died with $3.8 million and look at all this stuff in their barn. And nobody knew it because he wore overalls that were 20 years old. He drove a Chevy Silverado that was a 1987, and nobody had any idea. Those are the people that teach us and lead us. They truly are. They're the smartest among us. They are. They are. They mind their own business. They do the right thing their whole lives. They treat people well. They want their privacy. That's not too much to ask in this country. That is our foundation. That's what this has all been about. And these people are not taking this crap. They're not taking it. Camden County has stepped up and said, we have a new ordinance. It's the law of the county that as long as the Second Amendment exists to the U.S. Constitution, there will be no governing body that tells us we have to change any of our laws in Camden County. They've done a couple of these. We're in, I think South Dakota has a couple counties like this. They're going to pop up everywhere. This is winning. This is what you do. So if we believe, and most people that listen to this podcast believe, that it is absolutely impossible that Joe Biden is the most popular president in U.S. history, which is what the vote tally says. If you believe that there's no way Donald Trump got 12 million more votes 4 years later and lost, if you're one of those believers, here's what's about to happen. If you believe that the election result was fraudulent, as most of us believe, I can't define for you how, I can't prove it, I'm not into that. And I knew all along it was a futile effort. We weren't going to overturn anything. If you believe it is impossible that Joe Biden is 15 million more votes popular than Barack Obama or whatever, and that Trump got all these millions more votes and still lost, if you believe that, that will be proven out over the next few years. And it's going to be proven out not with a big item, not with one politician winning one big seat in Georgia or something happens in 2 years. That's not it. It's the people. Do you remember the Tea Party? Remember what happened to Obama when the Tea Party started? They lost everything. The House of Representatives got overwhelmed with conservatives. The Tea Party worked. Remember how they called them all bigots and racists and all this? This is about to happen again. This is going to be the Tea Party times 10. Because people have been affected by all this stuff. The Tea Party was just a group of people who had a philosophy. You know, they felt like taxes were too high. They were oppressed by that. It was a great group. Don't get me wrong. Great group. But they really hadn't been attacked. These were people that were paying attention. What I'm talking about now is people that don't pay attention to any of this stuff. People in America that don't pay attention to any of this stuff are paying attention now. They're like, wait, what? I have to wear a mask everywhere I go. I can't do this. Now you're going to tell me if I have to fly, I have to have a test, I have to do it. My medical records are private by law. My medical records are private. And now you're going to ask me to carry a card that says I've been vaccinated. I mean, these are all huge infringements upon our privacy and our rights as American citizens. And as more and more people are affected by this, they're in charge. People are going to say, these people in charge are messed up. They got to go. That's what's going to happen. And every little event, every Lauren Boebert Zoom call with guns behind her, and every Camden County in America, God bless Missouri and Camden County. Fantastic. Just God bless you for having the pool party. That was literally the first moment of normalcy after what? 2.5, 3 months of COVID? When I saw that pool party, I'm like, thank God. There is the first moment of normalcy in this country. People who just stuck their middle finger up and said, we don't care. And it was all young people. And by that point, what do we know about young people? They weren't dying of COVID. And these young people said, you are not holding us down. Let me tell you what, that pool at that party in Camden County last year, there was a whole bunch of little snowflake suburban, you know, liberal girls in there that their teachers are teaching them this and that, that learned quite a lesson that day when they were made, when they were told nationally, scolded, that they were awful people for living the way they learned. There wasn't a person a week later that was in that pool that wasn't a conservative voter. They learned, you can't do this to me. Don't tell me I can't go to the lake with my friends. This is going to work, folks. This is going to be big. It's going to be big and it's going to be bold. And I'm really, really excited about it. I'm really optimistic that that's where we're headed. We just keep seeing things every day that are, it really is as simple as every day, people on the ground, you, me, us, saying, we're not taking this anymore. We're not. I can't tell you, the last week or so, week and a half, there have been a couple times I've forgotten my mask. I do it all the time. I get ready to go in somewhere and I forgot my mask. And I walked in and say, I forgot my mask. It was really cold. And I said, I'll go back out and get it if you want me to, but I've had COVID. And they're like, nah, it's okay. Come on. You know, a lot of times it's a restaurant or something where you're literally walking 15 feet with your mask. And then you sit down and can take it off. So I've gotten in the habit of pulling my jacket over my face while I walk through instead of where I don't like the mask. You have no problem now walking into a restaurant. If you cut, I wear a stocking cap when it's cold. I'll put the stocking cap over my mouth like this. And I'll walk to my table and sit down and put the stocking cap in my jacket pocket. And I'm good to go. If I have to go to the bathroom, I'll cover my mouth. Don't tell me what I have to do. They're not going to arrest me. I'm not hurting anyone. And if I walk to the bathroom with a stocking cap over my face, that's good enough. That's above and beyond, if you ask me. People aren't taking this anymore. It's up to us. It's up to us. Don't be violent. Don't be crazy. Don't be over the top. But don't let them tell us what we have to do. This is critically important. All right, a couple more things. I know I'm wound up today. I know if you like wound up, Kev, and I don't know. I'm on a second iced tea here this morning, so maybe it's too much caffeine. Maybe it's just all week long. The cold is over. I feel like there's a lot of things going on. Maybe you feel the same way. I'm stoked about some of this stuff. A couple more things in news before we get to sports, and sports is a little thin today, but that's okay. I think you're okay with that. There's a gentleman named Michael Ryan who works for the Kansas City Star, and I realize that this podcast, I've taken a lot of shots at the Kansas City Star. I also realize that not very many of you subscribe to the Kansas City Star, but I do think it's important for you to know what's out there, and it's a changing time. We have to stop looking at something like the Kansas City Star as Kansas City's newspaper of record. This was their decision, not ours. When they decided to go to one political side and say, this is where we're going to get our subscriptions, is just from the liberals, and we're going to grow our business here, and that's all we care about, that was their business decision. Okay, they made a choice. Everybody's following the New York Times. The New York Times has done that. It's working for the Times. The Times isn't going out of business, but people all over the country subscribe to the New York Times because they're liberal, and it's their holy grail. It's their mecca. It's everything, the New York Times. Liberals visit New York, and they want to go to New York, and they want to stand outside the New York Times building and take a picture. Here I am at the New York Times. It's unbelievable. It's like they're, you know, mesmerized by it. Hypnotized is a better word. They're just, they're walking around zombies, New York Times. Well, the Star wants to be that. So I've taken a lot of shots at him. I'm going to try really hard, start pointing out some things in the Star that are good. We talked about Jesse Newell's column this week about the NCAA committee and how he thinks the tournament committee should go away and that there's a better way to do it. It's a great read. You can go find Jesse Newell on Twitter. I'm sure he put it there, and it's free to read. You can always generally get one article free and maybe a handful a month. So I'll try to mention to you the ones to go read at the Star that may be available free to you. But if you get on there, don't keep clicking around on a bunch of different stories, because if you do, they'll block you and say, hey, you have to subscribe to get that many stories. You can usually get like 5 stories a month before they start blocking you. And one listener wrote in a way for me to completely scam the Star and get behind the paywall. And I can't articulate well enough in this podcast how to do it. Maybe you can Google it. There are ways to scam behind it and get to it. I'm not going to give you that information. And to be honest, I don't know that anybody would want to do it. But if you do, knock yourself out. There's a gentleman named Michael Ryan, and he wrote a great editorial piece about Rush Limbaugh. And I don't know Michael Ryan, and I hadn't heard of Michael Ryan, and I hadn't seen any of his pieces, because when I go to the Star's website and I start reading editorial, here's the problem. This is just honest to God the truth. Most headlines are really slanted liberal headlines. And so I know to avoid them. If it's the editorial part, I'm like, I'm not reading that. I know what that's about. I'm not reading that. And this headline was Rush Limbaugh. And it said, after Rush Limbaugh, where do conservatives turn next? And I expected when I clicked it to read some whacked out liberal telling us which racist from Missouri that we're going to follow next and be brainwashed by. That's what I thought I was going to read. But I love Rush Limbaugh. If I see Rush Limbaugh on a headline this week, I'm reading it. And so I click it and I read it, and Michael Ryan's writing this brilliant, I mean absolutely brilliant, editorial about friends that he had. Michael Ryan, turns out, is originally from Kansas City, has worked everywhere around the country but here, came back here, what, a year and a half ago? The editorial board of the Star hired him to write conservative editorials so they can say they're balanced. I want to get Michael Ryan on the podcast and ask him what it's like to work there, because he's conservative. And he wrote this piece, and it starts out with, my dyed-in-the-wool liberal friend from the Northeast, typical da-da-da-da-da, Massachusetts, whatever, liberal her whole life, you know, 20-some years ago, started listening to Rush Limbaugh while commuting to work, or something of this effect. I don't know the details, the exact story. At first infuriated, she couldn't turn him off because he was so good at what he did, and it made her mad listening to his conservative points of view. Within weeks of running her small business and hearing Rush Limbaugh talk about the regulations, the taxes, the oppression by the government on small businesses, she realized, you know what, I don't like his politics, but boy, he's right about business. And then she kept listening, and she kept listening. And Michael Ryan writes, she's one of the most conservative people I know now. How many people did Rush Limbaugh turn from being young liberals to conservatives? This piece is a must read for you. It is Michael Ryan at the Kansas City Star. It's on the editorial portion. I believe it was on the 17th. I believe the actual thing came out online Wednesday. But it would have probably been, if it was in a print edition, it probably would have been in the 18th print edition. I think you can find it. If you don't subscribe to the Star and you only click on one thing, they give it to you free, I'm pretty sure. So if you go there, read Michael Ryan. Any chance you get, read Michael Ryan. Here's the best message we can send to the Kansas City Star. We don't subscribe to your paper, but we will read Michael Ryan. That is an unbelievable message to send them. They'll know how many people are reading it and clicking it. My guess is he's the lowest rated columnist they have, that their faithful liberal subscribers don't want to read what he has to say, and they skip right over him every day and don't read Michael Ryan. I'm claiming I'm an idiot. I can't believe I didn't know this guy or know that the Star had this guy, but I found him. He hasn't been there long, but I found him now, and I've reached out to him and asked him to come on the podcast. I don't think the Star is going to let him. We'll find out, but I don't think they will. I've had no luck at this point getting anybody from the Star on this show. I think they're out on that. And by the way, let me say this. The editorial board there, the opinion board, they owe me an apology. They called for my job. They wrote opinion pieces about my job in 2019 because they knew I was conservative. And they came. It's unbelievable how many people knew I was conservative by word of mouth, by just my stance on things in sports. It's unbelievable how many people knew this. Everybody in the media knew it. It's hard to hide within the media in Kansas City your political feelings. I was a total outsider. Everybody knew that. Everybody knew it. And the Star knew it. And they came after me. And they came after me hard. Once the Twitterverse blew up and their readership was all liberal, they're like, yeah, that guy's conservative. We're coming after him. They owe me an apology. They owe me an apology because they wrote it was out of bounds for me to question Andy Reid hiring his sons. And I'm not doing this. And I'm not doing this today. And I may at some point do it. I'm not going to promise you that I won't do it somewhere down the road. But I will just put it to you this way. That commentary that I made in June of 2019, I will say the same thing that I said since then. It is factual, it is accurate, and my comments stand. And I will never apologize for the comments. I apologize personally to Andy Reid and publicly to Andy Reid if I hurt his feelings or if I caused him pain, because that was not the intent. My comments were factual, they were correct, and I stand by them. And the Star's editorial board owes me an apology or some sort of a follow-up story. Where's the media? Serious question. Where's the media in this town calling me on this Britt Reid story? Where are they? I've not received one call of anybody saying, do you have any thoughts on what's happened? Or saying, you know what, we want to revisit what it was you were talking about? No, not a word from anyone. And I don't expect anybody to call. Maybe a TV station at some point. Maybe Channel 4, they're pretty fair. Maybe, 10% chance. Now, if more news comes out about Britt Reid, if we learn more about the situation, I don't think we will. I think we're going to get a police report that the blood alcohol content was whatever, and that's going to be that. But I think the Chiefs are going to nip this thing in the bud. I think they're going to settle. I don't think you're ever going to learn what happened in the facility. There's not going to be any, hey, this was our policy. There's going to be none of that. It's just going to be a total gag order on all this stuff. Just watch for that. But while talking about the Star and the editorial board, they want to. I love that they've got Michael Ryan there. They do owe me an apology or a retraction or a follow-up story on, hey, maybe what he was talking about was important. How about this story? What if more people had listened? For little Ariel. What if more people had listened? What if more people didn't cancel culture, shun him, and said, let's take a look at the substance of what he's talking about? What if? But by all means, go to the Star's website. If you can get the free article, read the Michael Ryan editorial piece on Rush Limbaugh. It's terrific. It is really terrific. We have talked a little bit about Australia passing laws against Facebook, Google, Twitter, some of these mega tech companies, that they'll have to pay for content in Australia. If you want to pay for Australian media companies, if you want Australian media companies' content so people do Google searches here or share this stuff on Facebook, if you want all these clicks and all these Australians in on your game, you're going to pay for it. You're going to pay our companies for this. And we're going to have regulation and monitor what it is that you're doing. And you're not going to be deleting this and doing that and all. You're not. Well, Google's come to the table and they're ready to settle by all accounts, and they're going to start paying for content. Facebook decided in these negotiations that they're going to play hardball. They have now blocked news and government access from being shared on Facebook in Australia in retaliations. They're trying to prevent other countries from doing the same thing as Australia. And I started thinking about this. So Facebook has said to Australians, if you come on Facebook and you see a story you like and you want to share it, we're not allowing it. We're blocking it. We're censoring it. It's out. We're not letting you share any news from Australia. And some government access, things like emergency services, in case of a storm, things, it's all blocked. Facebook has said, out, can't share this stuff with each other. Okay, so they think they're standing firm and playing hardball with Australia. Let me ask you something. What do we know about the free market? If Facebook is your go-to, and Google is, well, Google's not involved here, so let's just say Facebook. If Facebook is your go-to, and all of a sudden, it doesn't let you do the things that you want to do on Facebook, why would you stay? Facebook, these are really smart people. They built a gargantuan company, but this is a very simple concept. If you're taking things away from people that they like to do on Facebook, why would they stay with you? How can this possibly work as a hardball tactic with the Australian government? You're going straight to your consumer and saying F you because of your government. We're not going to let you share this stuff. We're not going to let you, we'll give you no access to government stuff. How does that work? Even if you're a liberal, how does that work? All of a sudden now, what you like to do on Facebook, you can't do anymore. How do you stay? How is that a win for Facebook? I can't figure it out. If somebody else can figure it out, let me know. God bless Poland. Poland is officially the country that, you know, when elections are coming up, Democrats like to say, I'm moving from America. If Trump wins again, Bruce Springsteen, I'm moving to Australia. Okay, go ahead. He's not moving to Kansas. He got in trouble in Kansas, right? Anyway. Poland is awesome. Poland would be a great place if you threatened to, I'm not living here. Well, now it's cold. I'm not sure about the golf courses. I'm just not. But God bless the Polish people. This is unbelievable. The Poles have decided that they are going to fine big tech. They passed a law, $13.5 million every single time big tech removes content. So this could happen in America. We need control of all three branches. We need everything. We need the House, we need the Senate, we need the White House. We could do this. You implement fines, you cannot, per occurrence, remove content. In other words, if you take down a Donald Trump tweet and remove it, $13.5 million fine. Somebody gets on there and writes a story and is sharing about building a wall and keeping immigrants out, and they remove it, $13.5 million fine. Every single time big tech removes content from their platform, they will be fined in Poland $13.5 million, or they will be blocked and not allowed to do business in Poland. People are stepping up, man. I'm telling you, there's nothing but good news. The world has seen what just happened in America, and they're mortified that it's happening here. They have always looked to us as the place where this would never happen. And it feels like it happened here first. And here's the response from the Minister of Justice, basically, in Poland. Big tech targets conservatives, Christians, and traditional values, and we won't stand for it. Then here's the money quote. Quote, we, Poland, spent 45 years under communism, and it taught us the value of free speech. Unquote. Poland is a beacon of free speech when America is not. Remarkable what's happening in the world. And a correction from yesterday, I had a listener to the podcast send me an email and say, oh, you botched that thing up, man. You botched up the Bachelor thing. I said, how did I botch that up? He said, well, the woman, if you listen to yesterday's podcast about the Bachelor, Chris Harrison, the host, is gone. He's toast. He's out. Because he had asked a question of a contestant about going to an Old South party in 2018 that was at a facility that was called Something Something Plantation. Well, in just 18 months' time, the word plantation can't be used anymore. So now nothing has plantation on it. They've taken it away from everything in the South. It's just gone. Plantation's been erased. And Chris Harrison, even for bringing the topic up, and he was stuck. He couldn't pick a side. He was done either way, no matter what he did. So he walked away, and now people are saying he's never coming back, and, you know, whatever. The woman that went to the party was not black. The woman that was upset with the woman who did go to the party was black. I had read the story, and the picture of the woman in the story was a black lady, and I assumed that was the woman that had gone to the party, and she is actually the woman that was upset that one of the fellow contestants had gone to this party. So imagine that. I mean, a petty fight between women on The Bachelor about someone 2 years earlier going to a party in the South at something called a plantation. Who knew that women on The Bachelor would start fighting over something like that? Unreal. A cat fight on The Bachelor got Chris Harrison fired. Remarkable. What kind of country are we living in? It is absolutely remarkable. We're living in one that allows Kevin Kietzman to have issues, and Bstock.net is a big part of that. Chris and the gang at Bstock they're just providing a tremendous service for everyone here in the Midwest. It's worth driving from an hour away or 2 hours away to save money at their outlet store. Check them out online at Bstock, B as in boy, Bstock.net, and you know all about the different electronics that they have. Just look at the prices they have on there. Compare their prices on the website to Best Buy's website or Nebraska Furniture Mart's website. Just go compare the prices online. Then factor in that their website price is higher than what you will pay if you come pick it up yourself. If you go to the outlet store in Olathe, you save even more. 14680 South Flaming Road in Olathe. It is bstock.net, the only way to buy electronics in Kansas City. Buck Roofing and Construction. We picked out the roof that Buck's going to put on our new house. We picked it out yesterday. And so that's exciting. We're checking boxes on some of these things as the house is being built. And so that's kind of fun. And so we picked out a roof, the Buck Roof. I can't tell you what kind of a great feeling it is to know that Buck's roof on. It's an absolute no-brainer. If you knew Ron Buck like I know Ron Buck, you would never, ever consider anyone else. He's just so solid. Good man, great company, awesome. Ron Buck, 384-2680. Sleep well knowing Buck Roofing fixed the roof over your head. And the only place I buy jewelry for my lovely bride and my lovely daughter. I think I got something at Joslyn's one time for my mom. I think they had a little bracelet one time with a Royals logo on it. And I got that for her. Oh, it was earrings. It was earrings. Oh, she still wears them. Yes. It's kind of like the crown earring thing. They got some stuff like that there. But I like to buy for Jessica there. I bought a couple things for my daughter there through the years. It's just such a great place. 95th and Antioch in Overland Park. Joslyn's Jewelry is the jewelry you'll recommend to your friends and family. In sports, I won't spend a lot of time here on college basketball. There's not a lot of big issues, and it's not a really big college basketball weekend. But it should be noted that Wichita State beat number 6 Houston on Thursday night. And this is an impressive story. Wichita State is in a scandal year. Greg Marshall is out. Isaac Brown is in as the coach. They're one game out of first place in the American Conference. They got their marquee win last night, their big profile win over number 6 Houston. And it looks like Wichita State is going to the NCAA tournament. I couldn't be happier for them. I couldn't be happier because I'm sure a lot of Wichita State fans freaked out when they lost Greg Marshall because all they did for a decade was just fight to keep him there. And then all of a sudden a scandal comes up and he's got to go. And I don't think it was easy for a lot of Wichita State fans. But clearly he left the program in good shape, and clearly Isaac Brown is doing a great job. And it looks like Wichita State is headed to the tournament, and I think that's fantastic. That puts us back to the good old days, right? You remember the good old days of like the 90s in college basketball to early 2000s? Wichita State is in, Kansas is in, Missouri's in, K-State's in last place, right? You remember those days? It's like 20 years of that. Actually, K-State's in next to last place. We don't talk about who they're playing this weekend because it doesn't matter. They'll lose. But Kansas is playing Texas Tech. This should be a good game. Now, again, probably a low-scoring game. Maybe a very low-scoring game. Tech's going to try to defend Kansas, which has struggled offensively. Tech can play some defense. That's what they're known for. This is not a sure thing for Kansas. This is a 50-50 game, even though it's at Allen Fieldhouse. Tech can win this game. Kansas has a tough stretch here. They've got Texas Tech, Texas, and Baylor to finish the season. That's going to be difficult. And the bad part about that is the Texas game is the road game. So Texas hasn't been playing as well, but that is the one where Kansas goes on the road. It's possible they go 0-3. I don't think they will. I think they'll beat either Tech or Texas. I think they're going to go 1-2 here to finish. They're considering scheduling another game because there's an open week before the tournament. And, you know, putting something else on the resume, on the schedule, we'll see what Kansas comes up with there. But they're offensively challenged. That's what they're working on right now, and we'll see how it plays out against Tech at Allen Fieldhouse. Missouri has South Carolina. Missouri needs something good. They've had some bad run here for 10 days or so. Some bad things happen. So something good's got to happen for Missouri there. They're still in great shape. They're a tournament team. They just, if you have a point in your season that's a pothole, a low point, this was it, and they got to fix it. They're capable of doing it. They need to get Tillman back. A lot of things got to happen here, and Missouri can do this. So I haven't given up on Missouri. We'll see how that plays out. In football, Carson Wentz is headed to the Indianapolis Colts. Another quarterback headed into the AFC to lose to the Chiefs. That's the only way I can look at it. Look, I think Carson Wentz can probably do better for the Colts than Phillip Rivers did, and they were a good team this year with Phillip Rivers. They were a good team with Andrew Luck. It has felt like, although early on in Luck's career, he didn't have much talent around him, had a bad line and a bunch of stuff like that, but it has felt like Indy is close if they had the right quarterback. This is their best shot. There are still a lot of people that think Carson Wentz is one of the most talented players in the game, that he was just in a terrible situation in Philadelphia. It was untenable. Once he got hurt and Nick Foles came in and won the Super Bowl and they decided to lose Foles and keep Wentz, that's when and I said it at the time, they should have dealt Carson Wentz right then and stayed with Nick Foles, because the people of Philadelphia would have watched over the next few years. If they didn't win a bunch of games, it's still Nick Foles out there, the guy that won the Super Bowl, the whole deal. And they've been questioning, did we keep the right guy? Did we do whatever? Now, it isn't like Foles has gone on and been great. And they were true to Carson Wentz because of where they drafted him and what they were paying him. And they made a mistake. This is all they got for Carson Wentz. What could they have got after they won the Super Bowl? If they kept Foles and traded Wentz then, they could have got three number ones. Easy. Easy. Now what they get is a third-round pick this year and a second-round pick next year. Unbelievable. For Carson Wentz, who the Colts will owe $41 million to guaranteed, and he's a $100 million cap hit if they decide to let him go after that. So this is a long-term deal for Indy. Carson Wentz will play there at least 3 years as the starter. The trade cannot be finalized or announced until March 17th, so you're going to see reports that this trade has happened, but it will not be confirmed. The league year starts March 17th, and nobody can announce anything until then. You may remember that happened with Alex Smith. The Chiefs had Alex Smith, and they didn't make it official for like 3 weeks. They couldn't. So that's the same kind of deal right here. Good for the Colts. We'll see. That just makes the AFC all that much tougher. I'm 50-50. I think Wentz could go either way. I think there's a chance if he gets in the right system, he could be a terrific quarterback and maybe win a championship. I'm not ruling that out, but there's also a chance that he's just not that good. It's hard to say at this point. It is really hard to say. And we'll finish with something kind of fun here. I like to try to end the show with something a little off kilter, and we'll open this up to emails if you have one. I was watching a game the other night, and they were advertising for IHOP. And don't get me wrong, I love me some pancakes at IHOP and some breakfast at IHOP. Who doesn't love IHOP breakfast? Well, in this era and of restaurants struggling like they do, breakfast places are thriving, but they're all coming up in niches. You see these all over the place. Places that do breakfast and lunch, they open at 6:30 and close at 1:30. And they're really good at what they do, and they're not chains. They're mom and pops, and their breakfasts are outrageously great. They have, the new trend is they have bars. People go in on the weekend, maybe have a screwdriver or Bloody Mary with their breakfast. It's a whole different concept, and it's big, and it's working, and it's the fastest growing segment of the restaurant industry. So to fight back, we've seen what Denny's and IHOP are trying to do. That you know that they have breakfast there 24 hours a day. You know that about these restaurants. They're trying to sell steaks and cheeseburgers and shrimp night and all that stuff to have you come in for dinner. It's worked marginally. The thing is, somebody will say in a family of four or five, how about breakfast for dinner? And a couple people will think that's a great idea, and they'll go have breakfast for dinner, but then there's cheeseburgers on there for the other people or whatever. I think that's why they do it, because I do think people like to have breakfast for dinner sometimes. That's a cool thing. IHOP now, they're advertising burritos and burrito bowls. This is their big push. The savior for IHOP is, because they're in trouble, their savior is burritos and bowls. I wasn't in on a conversation. I'm not smart enough to know. I don't know. It seems like you might be a little late to the game on that, that there's burritos and bowls places that have this covered. Unless it's simply telling people IHOP is the place where everybody can come and find what they want. If you want breakfast for dinner and your kid says they want to go to Chipotle, you got a teenage kid, maybe you can make everybody happy by going to IHOP. Maybe that's what this is. I don't know. I'm not in the restaurant business. I don't know. Just seems a little out of place. It seems a little bit like Mexican pizza to me. You know, I've had Mexican pizza or taco pizza. It's okay. It's okay, but it's weird to me. When I go to bite into it, it's now a taste that I'm not expecting. So if I'm going to have Mexican food, I'm going to have Mexican food. I don't need a Mexican pizza. Oh, get Mexican food. If I go to a Mexican place, I don't want pasta sauce. I don't want to dip my chips in pasta sauce. If I go to a barbecue place, how about this? Pasta sauce on ribs? That doesn't make any sense. You're going for barbecue. So a lot of these things I don't get. It's kind of like the hole-in-the-wall sports bars that have nothing against these places, folks. Love these places. Plastic basket, plastic wax paper in your basket food. Perfect for chicken fingers and tater tots or onion rings or cheese poppers or something. Awesome. Great. Love it. But when they say they have a $7.99 steak special, you just get a little bit worried. The steak special is $7.99 and the chicken fingers are $8.99. Okay, I'm trying to figure this one out, but that's the way it works. I don't know what IHOP's doing with burritos and bowls, but send me your email on what you think the biggest contradictions in restaurant food is. And I'll read them on the air sometime next week. Kevin at kkhasissues.com. Send me your email. I just gave you a couple of examples. The pasta sauce with Mexican food. No, Mexican pizza. Burritos and bowls at IHOP. Send me what you think sounds weird. Not that it is, and not that it won't work. Just caught me off guard. I'm like, yeah, I don't know. What are your contradictions in food? Or maybe at your house. It doesn't have to be a restaurant. Send them to me. Kevin@kkhasissues.com. And have a great weekend. I think Spencer's going to do a weekend edition. I'll be putting the Patrons podcast up later today, and the newsletter will be coming out, the weekly Patrons post tomorrow. If you want to sign up and become a patron, you can do that at kkhasissues.com. You'll get another podcast and newsletter within the next 36 hours. So 24 hours, probably. So just jump on that. If you want to join, it's just $5 a month at kkhasissues.com.
Thanks for listening to Kevin Keatsman Has Issues. For additional VIP-only podcasts, live streaming of breaking news, sports wagering tips from the experts, and in-person special events, visit kkhasissues.com and become a patron for as little as $5 per month.
This has been a production of Crooked Tail Media Incorporated.